My name's Adele Onyango, and welcome to another episode of Legally Clueless. No, seriously, I have no clue what I'm doing, but I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one. Hey you, welcome to episode 135 of Legally Clueless. Thank you for listening to this podcast. If this is your first time ever joining our tribe, audio episodes go out every single Monday, and you can join our online community on Instagram. We're at Legally Clueless Podcast. There's a link to that in the show notes. And I really think you should check out our YouTube channel, which is our newest baby. So you'll find season one of this podcast there, of our video series, that is. And you get to watch Africans sharing their stories live on camera. And then you can also check out our four-part tour series, because we just went on tour across four counties in Kenya. There's a link to all of those things in the show notes, so make sure you check them out. However, really excited for this particular episode because, speaking of our tour, it features a story that we recorded in Nakuru, and it's a story by Shiko Kihika. Listen to this.
He lies to my aunt and my mom, tells them how he's planning to take care of the baby, how we're gonna move in, how all these things are gonna happen, and it was a picture perfect kind of man. Every other day there's a woman calling me asking me, oh, I heard you're pregnant, you know, I also was pregnant, and he told me to do ABCD because I worked till 2 weeks to my delivery. Hey, public hospitals, people are screaming everywhere, and I have to share beds with two women, very big women. I told her, I think it's either I've urinated myself or my water broke. The doctors are on strike, so I'll have to wait until it's an emergency. So I was in labor from 11 a.m. all the way to 11 p.m. A lady called and she's like, hi, are you Shiko? I was like, yeah. I'm like, who is this? I'm the wife to so-and-so. I just realized that you were pregnant and you've given birth. I'm like, wife, how? Since when? Like, I'm just a girlfriend. He's been living with me. Like, where? Here in Nakuru.
So clearly it's definitely one of those stories that's going to have you gasping in shock in quite a few places, but it's going to be coming up a little later in this episode. So I'm not going to be talking too much because I want to give as much time to Shiko's story, but what I will want you to check out are a group, I believe, a music group that I just stumbled on, and they're from Chad. And I say, I think they're a group because they sing mostly in French. And I think it's either two guys, or two guys and two girls, or two guys and one girl, or one guy and one girl. I've tried to figure out what constitutes or who constitutes this group, but it's all in French. And yeah, either way, regardless of how many they are, the music is awesome. So as much as I'll tell you to check out one particular song, I think you should just look them up and see and listen to rather all their songs. So they're called Afrotronics, and I happened to watch them live performing on stage, and it's like one guy who was behind like the DJ decks, and then before you know it, his singing and his vocals are so beautiful. And then before you know it, he's grabbed this guitar and he's like such a master of the guitar. And then there's another guy who is drumming so well, and it's just like so mind-blowing. And then before you know it, there's one girl who comes on stage and she's dancing in a way that it's not a performance. It's almost like she's in tune with the music and almost like interpreting it into dance. And I'm like, wow, this is awesome. And then before you know it, there's another girl who joins her on stage and she's dancing like in the same way, but even better. So I don't know if they're all part of the group, but what I do know is that you need to check out their music. So one song that they did perform that I absolutely loved, even though I have no idea what it's about, is a song called Oyo. By checking out their YouTube, first and foremost, I can't believe I'm only just discovering them, because this particular song came out in 2018 and now is when I'm finding out about them. But it features another artist called Sedina. I really want you to check out this song and check out Afrotronics. They are futuristic, very Africa-centered, and their music is so relatable, even though they're singing in a language that if you don't speak French, you wouldn't understand. But you'll connect with like the guitar, especially like on an African level, you'll connect with like the guitar, the instrumentals, and I just think that's really, really magical. So I've put a link to the song in the show notes, But don't just stop with that one song. You can check out the rest. I'm sure you'll like it. That's like the burning thing that I wanted to share. I think we need to jump straight into 100 African Stories. And this is a story by Shiko. Shiko is one of the first people to sign up to share her story during the Legally Clueless tour. And she was the first storyteller we recorded in Nakuru. Her story is super powerful. I did not know this part of her story. What I did know is that she's a young Kenyan who started a movement to kind of promote cohesion and less tribalism in Kenya, which I thought was super awesome. But I didn't know that she had, you know, experienced motherhood super young in her life and a non-supportive baby daddy and so many things that she overcame. And it's funny how all of those things came up in the story. So I don't want to talk too much about it because I want to give her all the time to share that story with you. So here you go. 100 African Stories on Legally Clueless, coming to you from the road. We partnered with African No Filter to take this podcast on tour to Nakuru, Kisumu, Mombasa, and Nairobi, bringing you powerful and inspiring African stories.
My name is Shiko Kihika. I think that's the name everybody knows out here. But my ID name is Awanjiko Kihika. I'm a young girl who was born in a village called Kibagare in Limuru. I was raised up in a ghetto called Mashara in Nakuru. So I've been raised in the ghetto, but grew up to be this woman who wants the best of her entire life. And one thing interesting about this life is that I got, from all the stereotypes that we have, I visited Kisumu, my first time as a grown-ass lady, and gosh, you didn't tell me if there are some words I should not use.
Oh no, you can use them. You're allowed.
Sorry, as a grown lady, I visited Kisumu, and the people there gave me a good name also. Now, since I can't pronounce it, I just know it's the daughter of the mountain, and yes, I am the daughter of the mountain. My 19-year-old, I was this hyper girl who wanted to join Egerton University to come in and study public relations. Being a young girl, being hyper, being very talkative, having very ambitious dreams and everything, I got into acting. I got into theater arts. When I got into theater arts, I did my first job, and I earned how much was it? 19,000, 20,000 shillings. And I was the richest girl at that point on that day. Unfortunately, along the way, my ambitions were shattered. I got pregnant along the way. Being raised by African parents, that means you're mother enough, you should learn to provide. So they pulled out from paying my education. So the day that I was pregnant, and I keep saying the devil was at work on that day. It was my first time engaging, and it was the first time, to be honest, I barely even have memories of what that experience was like. But 3 days later, I started feeling sort of cramps and everything. And the first thought was, I was told if you take P2, you're going to get cramps and kind of get your periods and everything. So I was like, okay, maybe it worked. Day three, day four, day five, I'm like, okay, I'm not getting any periods at this point. And what is happening is that the cramps are continuous, and now my back is also hurting. I need to know why. So I went to the nearby chemist, and I was like, nimetumwa na aunti niulize. There's the shame of just going out because of how we've been raised and everything. Nimetumwa na aunti niulize, if when someone is feeling this, what that could be. And the lady goes like, tell her she's pregnant. So I had to go back home. And going back home, the first person I thought was like, my baby daddy, I thought he cared. And the first person I'm calling is him. And guess who picks the phone? Another lady. Yo, it's 19-year-old trying to have a conversation with another 20-year-old about you being pregnant by the person she's calling her boyfriend and everything. And it was chaotic. I am a person who doesn't know how to go back and forth. When he came back and called, I don't think he came back, he was just there. They had their own dramas at that point also. But when he called and I told him, and he was like, oh, you're trying to pin me down. I know you've been sleeping around and everything. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. My plan B was to talk to my girls about it. And I didn't know how to pick this conversation with my girls. So what I did is just a random conversation. Hey, can we all test if we're pregnant and see who can be pregnant amongst us? So we went and bought the kits. They had 50 shillings each. So we bought like 7 of them. We came and took the test. And guess who's pregnant? I am. So everybody's looking at me and is like, okay, so how are you telling your mother? How will you do this? And I'm like, I want to get an abortion at this specific point. Mm-hmm. Because how do I pick this conversation with my dad? I'm born of a family of four girls. Mm-hmm. So we don't have a brother. So I was my dad's son. So being the first born, I'm the one who's like, panda juu tengeneza stima fanya nini. So I was my dad's boy growing up. And then we had this relationship where I could talk to my dad about anything. And at this point, I felt like I'm disappointing him. And I knew it would crush him if I told him. So what I was thinking is, now my next step is abortion. Mm-hmm. And abortion in Kenya is a whole conversation from the gospel of Yohana to the government and everything. When I thought about it, someone told me, go to Mary Stops. Mm-hmm. They will help. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to go there. So I went. When I went there, I was very unsure. I found this young man and I was like, so you're the one who's going to help me. And he's like, no, the only way I'll help you is I'll give you these pills. You go with them. Don't take them. Just stay with them for 1 week. If you feel like you're sure you want to take them, come back. If you're not sure, come back also. Let's have a conversation. So we had a conversation after 2 weeks, actually. I told him I never took them. And he was like, okay, why? And I was like, imagine knowing this is maybe the only baby I'll get. And maybe this is my father's son I'm carrying. And then what happens? And then I started telling him I've had issues with my hormones because even way back in high school, I started my periods when I was during my form four. Mm-hmm. So I had gone through all this madness of being tested if I'm pregnant from form one all the way to form four. So I was like, maybe I just want to keep it. Let's see how we face life. Let's see how we go about it. Then he was like, no, you need to go and talk to your parents about it. I was like, okay, I will. I was like, instead of talking to my parents, I got a gig at a supermarket. So I was like, I'm trying to figure out my madness. I'll just position everything and I'm able to take care of my son and nobody cares at this specific point, but I'm fine. So I got a gig with Nivea. So by then, when working as a promoter, there are things you used to get checked. How big you are. You had to be very slender at that point. Your nails need to look a certain way. Your hair need to look a certain way. So there are all these things. Luckily, I would match them. Apart from I was very short at that time. But then I was like, if I fit in all this and then I'm very talkative, so they'll basically just buy it. Luckily, I got it. I started now growing and everybody would notice my clothes are not fitting me and everything. Every time you're rushing to the toilet and everything. And oh, this brought issues now with my supervisor. I was fired. So when I was fired, this is fast forward. When I was fired, what happened is I got a job immediately after with Bouncy. So I was like, this is perfect. A pregnant woman, Bouncy, it's perfect. It's working out for me. I've not told my parents anything. This is like my fifth month. It's not showing, so I'm still like, I'm just growing. Everybody thinks, kanakula vizuri, kanapata pesa, she's fine. So my pregnancy started showing on my 7th month. So just a month before it started showing, I was like, now I need a plan. I need to know how to tell my mom. And my mom's weakness is her firstborn sister. So I was like, I'm going to call my aunt and I'm going to blackmail her. So that she talks to the sister. So I called my aunt and I was like, where are you? And she was like, I'm in town. What are you doing? I'm at work. Like, okay, when someone does something wrong, according to you, what should happen? And my aunt was like, okay, what have you done? It's like, I'm just asking, if something is wrong according to you and might not be wrong according to her, what happens? It's like, are you pregnant? I was like, so let me tell you something. If anyone of you tries to insult me, if anyone of you tries to sort of come at me, I'm leaving. Yes, I'm pregnant. Mm-hmm. So, and then my aunt was like, okay, so who's the father? And like the normal Kenyan parents, where is he from? What tribe is he from? How old is he? And I told her everything. And she was like, does your mom know? It's like, that's why I've told you. Because she doesn't know. And you're the only one who can pick this conversation with her. So she was like, okay, I won't tell her today because I know I'll see her, but I'll try to figure out how to tell her. I told her, sawa, bora tu mimi nispigiwe kelele na mtu, I am fine. So my aunt saw my mom and couldn't keep it. So she called me and she told me, nimemwona, wacha tu nimwambi. I was like, this is my destiny. My mom is that woman who you don't negotiate anything with. And then being that she raised me in church, like I never missed camps every single year. I even graduated in church. I used to sing up on Mbele Kanisa, goodness. So, like, she knew she raised me to be this woman, according to her, who is, like, a righteous woman, you know. So, knowing that even I couldn't just... The bare thought of thinking that you couldn't go for a church camp was death sentence for you. So, now how are you telling this woman that you're pregnant at 19? How? Where do you start this conversation? So, when my aunt told her, I was like, this is done for me. Iyo siku niliamka. I washed the utensils. I cleaned the house. Everything needed to be cleaned before she comes back. Because anything wrong would have caused chaos in that house. So when she came, she never told me anything. I was like, this is weird. So we cooked. We always cook with my mom, like all her daughters in the kitchen when it comes to cooking and everything. So when she was, I remember she was cooking ugali. And my mom is a typical African woman. Ugali, and you see a jiko, si ugali. So pepeta jiko, kele ugali. So when she's there, kisongo ugali, she goes like, ati niliambiwa nini? And I was like, hivo. So she says, eh, sasa tunafanya nini? Who is telling your father? It's like you. Because me, he's not my husband. You have to tell her. You have to tell him. She's like, me, see me. So tunyamaze, we see what happens. Then she asks, umeenda clinic? I'm like, yes, I've gone twice. Mbona hujaisema? Just go and talk mniwe. He's like, where do you get money for this? And I was like, so let's go to work. My money is saved, everything. I've even started buying clothes. They're at my friend's place. And she was like, okay, now akuna reverse gear. This is it. We are here. So she never talked to my dad. My dad noticed when I was at 8 months. So yeah, now I'm big and the time is showing. You can't hide anymore. And my dad goes to my mom and says, msichana wako, ni nini yako na? And my dad being my best friend, this is the last time he ever spoke to me. So you can imagine, like, we're in the same house, but tunapitana kama strangers. So I would say, luckily, when I was turning my 9th month, he was supposed to fly out to Haiti. So for me, it was like, bingo, this is it. I didn't know that he had, like, a card up his sleeves, and he came and said, I'm flying out next month. I need to meet that man. And this is a whole conversation. This is a guy we've not even agreed. He's just there texting you and telling you, I'll take care of my offsprings. Mm-hmm. I'll do. But you're not sure they'll do because even clinic, you're alone, you know. So I texted the guy and I said, my dad says he wants to meet you. And he's like, okay, I'll come. When does he want to come? I told him he's supposed to be flying out on a certain day. So if you can come earlier, it will do us some justice. He was like, okay, I'll come. Ninja never showed up.
Yes.
This specific person calls and says he will come on the day my dad is flying out. So imagine he's leaving from Nakuru to Nairobi and then fly out to wherever. So he needs to leave earlier because of traffic dynamics and everything. It was at around 12 noon. I called the guy and he's like, where are you? He's like, I passed by a barber shop, but I'm still coming. Kumbe msee hajatoka Nairobi. So I was like, me, I have to release my dad because if I don't, all this anger will be on me. So I told him, I don't think this person is coming. So he was like, sawa. My dad called him. He said, I'll meet you at the airport. He never showed up. So, of course, my dad is angered by why I did this. And then now you have an irresponsible man. This is a whole other issue. So this guy, to cover up, he comes to meet my mom. The weirdest thing is that he came all the way. He had come from TZ, Nairobi, and now Nakuru. And then I'm the one who gave him money for shopping. You don't see African parents without sugar. So I was like, Ninja, you need to buy something. Just shika, just buy. So we get home. He lies to my aunt and my mom, tells them how he's planning to take care of the baby, how we're going to move in, how all these things are going to happen. And it was a picture perfect kind of man. And this is it. So my aunt is there telling me, now you see, you can even get married. Like, this man sounds like a very responsible man. I'm like, I'm the only one who knows the drama behind the scenes. So I'm not going for this thing. So we said, Sawa, let me just give myself time and just deliver and then figure out my life. So at this point, I'm like, the guy is calling now every day. The guy is like, oh, I'm going to come and see you. I'm going to do. But every other day, there's a story about him and other women. Every other day, there's a woman calling me, asking me, oh, I heard you're pregnant. You know, I also was pregnant and he told me to do ABCD. So it was a whole thing. Fast forward to my delivery day. It was December 25th. I was bleeding, so I had to go to hospital because I worked till 2 weeks to my delivery. So you can imagine on a small market, supermarket selling things every single day. December 25th, I went to hospital. I was bleeding. And the lady looks at me and says, when was your D-day? And I said, my D-day is 7th January. She's like, I think the baby is almost here. So it's like, so what do we do? She told me, book a day for your CS because the way your baby is, we cannot just deliver normally. So I was like, okay, let's do this. So I was referred to a different hospital. So I went. I'm not even telling my mom anything. Me on a boda, I went and I booked my CS. So when I booked, A day I thought like, okay, if I give birth on 31st, and people like Africans always have a holiday on 1st for whatever reason, so people will be at home and I won't be there, so it will be less shameful. Like, it won't be chaotic for me. So, and then I was happy I won't feel the labor. I was like, I've gone through enough pain. I don't want any other kind of pain. I'm good. So when 31st came, I left home on 30th because I needed to be admitted a day before for scans and everything and then deliver the next day. On 30th, I went. Hey, public hospitals. Hey, Jesus. People are screaming everywhere. And I have to share beds with two women, very big women. And I never slept. I was just sitting. So on the next day, my back starts hurting. Do I know what this is? I've never had anything like that. But people are screaming. So since my pain is not like at that level, I'm not in labor, I'm fine. And then my water broke. I'm not telling anyone. I was just that person of, I got this. I'll figure it out. I'm not screaming. See, people are screaming here. We have not. So when the nurse came and asked me, what's wrong with you? I told her, I think it's either I've urinated myself or my water broke. I don't know what that is. Like, where's your mom? I've not called her. Call her. I call her. My mom comes and is like, so you went to hospital, you never told us. Ulisema tu meambi admitiwe. So how do I know you're giving birth if you're not telling me? I was like, I was scared. She's like, sawa, let me come. They came with my aunt. We stayed there. My aunt is like, you're not in pain? I'm like, I think I am, but it is not as that woman, so I'm fine. And then the doctor comes and says, the doctors are on strike, so I'll have to wait until it's an emergency. So I was in labor from 11 a.m. all the way to 11 p.m. But I'm just there because I'm just looking weak. I'm just there. But I'm telling my aunt, I want yogurt. I want this. I'm just going to keep eating as long as I'm fine. So when the labor got intense, the nurse called an emergency doctor. So when the doctor came, while he was a young man, so I was like, you'll kill me. I don't think I want to. And then there was a mama who had an emergency just next to me. So she had to go first. So I was so bitter. I was feeling like, why is it that I always come second? Why is it that nobody cares about what I'm feeling? And then he comes and says, you know what? You're the only person I've not seen crying. So I think you're fine. Just let me finish with this woman and then I come for you. So it's like, fine. And I was prepared. And then they inserted a catheter inside me. Hey, I asked questions. They almost chased me away. I was like, why are you doing this to me? What if you kill my baby with that thing? So I'm naturally a drama queen, I think. But I found very nice nurses. And luckily my mom knew someone, one of the midwives. So she was with me in the theater. And I remember when they do this epidural thing and they want you to be halfway paralyzed and halfway alive, I was like, this is not me. So I started asking the doctors, so you people, how do you sleep at night cutting people like this? And they had to force me to just like go to sleep. So one thing I remember, which I think that is one of the biggest memories I have of my son, is that I never had him crying. But when I woke up and the nurses asked me, one thing that I remember is I told them, I only know that thing was a boy. If it's a girl, it's not mine. So I know it was supposed to be a boy. That's what the scan said. I need a boy because this is what will mend my relationship with my father at this point. And it was quite interesting because, yes, my boy was brought at 3.9 kgs. So you can imagine a 50 kg giving birth to a 3.9 kg. So this was a big baby, like a big baby. And then my baby only had one name. So because I knew they're going to be chaos, the father will want the baby name to their side with as much as he's been very responsible. And then there's my father and the culture and everything that comes with it. So I only gave him one name at that point. The weird thing is that the father came at 5 a.m. from nowhere with a group of 10 men. And one lady. And these people came carrying flowers. People came carrying flowers. So it was quite weird. And I was like, okay, so you're here. Where are you from? It's like, well, I just flew in from TZ, which was a lie. It's like, okay, so you've come to see your son? Yeah, with flowers, yes. Diapers. Because I was thinking like, this kid won't use diapers. They come naked. They don't come with their plates like we are told. This thing comes naked, needy from day one, you know. So it's like, so diapers, he says, no, I'm going to get you some shopping. I just needed to first come and see my son and everything. He takes photos with this kid and fills them on Facebook. I don't know. I'm literally still on that bed. I can't move. I can't do anything. And then he left. So the next day he came very early in the morning and then he came with all of his friends. Again, with nothing. So it's like, okay, cool. This is quite interesting. And then on the third day, because I stayed in hospital for 4 days. On the third day, what happened is a lady called very early in the morning and she's like, "Hi, are you Shiko?" I was like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Who is this?" "I'm the wife to so and so. I just realized that you were pregnant and you've given birth." I'm like, wife, how? Since when? Like, I'm just a girlfriend. He's been living with me. Like, where? Here in Nakuru. Here in Nakuru. So it was quite weird. So I told her, I don't think I have the energy for back and forth. I don't think we have any relationship. The only thing that is here is the kid. So if he's willing to take care of the kid, well and good. If not, also, I think I'm fine. And the lady goes silent. So kumbe, it was drama after that. Mm-hmm. So after we left hospital, the ninja came home. I've never seen such an uncultured man. Jesus. He came home the entire week. So he was coming and then, you know, normally the way our mom cooks, so unja, hey, whatever, you're pregnant, you need to take a whole jar of uji. So my mom was cooking a lot, especially in the morning. So he would come, eat lunch, and then leave for a whole entire week. And he never even one day bought socks. Adele socks is 50 shillings. He never bought anything. So on the last day, I remember, because I was really sick, my mom woke me up and I told her, "I'm not waking up. Amekuja kufanya nini?" And she was like, "So what do we do?" Hamia monyeshe mtoto aone mtoto aende. So he never left. So I had to wake up and just say hi and then go back. But when he left, I think, I remember he got to the door and I was like, "Bro, when you metoka hivo, just don't come back. Because you're becoming a whole burden now." He went and he never came back. He went and he never came back. But a month later, I was like, for the first time, I was trolled on Facebook. And for me, it was someone telling the world that nina mnyima mtoto because my parents are able. And then also another lady that they were dating with at that point who started saying, "Oh, I'm incapable of raising a baby. I don't have a job. I'm still young. I'm sick." That the guy needs to be given the rights to the kids so that they can raise the kid together. It was quite a mess. But luckily, people fought my battles. So that was a good thing at that point. So 7 years, almost 8 years down, nowhere to be seen. Hey, I tell people, hey, Mungu wangu alalagi kiondo. Jesus, this is it. What happened is me and my dad were not in talking terms for quite a long time, 3 or 4 months, yeah, until the baby was born. So when the baby was born, my mom had to force the baby on him. So my mom would wake up early, take the baby, and anampeleka kwa kitanda yao, and anamlalisha hapo, and be like, "Wacha afanye venye atafanya." So it took a lot of time to mend this relationship and even trust at the end of the day. So I went back to my supermarket gigs. That's when my baby was around 1 year. So I started leaving him at home and then I go for Jobo. But you've never seen, I honestly can't even explain how I used to survive because my salary was 14,000. And I was supposed to go to Naivasha every 2 weeks. So you're spending, your transport is within the 14,000. Then you have a baby who needs diapers, who needs clothes, and you also need to eat. So somehow I survived. I was working at Naivas for like a year or two. Then one day I woke up and I didn't want to be at Naivas anymore. Because I'm that person who, I honestly don't know how to see people being harassed. And I also don't know how to feel like I'm being oppressed and I'm silent. So it never sat well with so many people. So I just one day woke up and I never went to work. And my boss texted me, "You never went to work?" And I was like, "Yeah, I never did." And she's like, "Oh, you need to stay at home until further notice." And I was like, "I don't think there's any further notice." Mm. At this point, I think I'm done. So since she was a family friend, she called my mom. And told my mom nimewacha kazi. So this started chaos again. Jesus. The first thing my dad asked me is, "Unaacha kazi? Na uliza mapema unaenda wapi?" And I told him, "I don't know where I'm going. I just don't think I'm meant for that. I don't think that is what I want to do. I'll figure it out as I go." So I had started going. You know the way you have friends who go for these meetings and everything and then they tag you? So I was tagged into one or two meetings where young people are just discussing local issues, political issues, and then amplifying them online. But then I had a Twitter account with 10 followers or something. So I started learning what they're doing. And then I was like, "This is interesting. What if we stop waiting for those organizations to come and assemble us? What if we start assembling ourselves and just having these conversations?" So I started assembling people. And we were going towards the 2017 elections. Mm-hmm. So what happened is, at that time, there was need to have a conversation. I was losing so many of my friends from these Kikuyu Luo's fights. And I'm like, okay, it's not making sense to me. And then having grown up in a home where We started cooking fish when we were grown up. Fish was for lures. We started cooking omena when we were like all grown. You know, like there was food that was specific for specific tribes. And I was like, this is not me. So we started having these conversations. And then I was like, I now have 200 followers on Twitter. So what can we do? And since I have the power of assembling people, we can just join our forces and see if we can be doing something. So for like the entire election period, every single Thursday, we used to have a trend. We used to call it Tribeless Youth. And I remember I used to be that person. Okay, how do we do this? Can someone teach me? So I'll be taught and then I'm doing that and you'll think I'm the queen of this thing and I don't know how it goes. A year down, I started figuring out, okay, this can actually be a whole movement. This can actually be something. And then people started telling me, I think we need to be better organized so that we can actually even find resources. So I worked for 2 years for an existing but not existing organization. Mm. I'm not being paid. I'm just there like I'm going to work every morning, but my work is going sitting down in someone's shop and tweeting and doing. That was my work. And then I met someone from Kenya Human Rights Commission, I think, and they were like, oh, we thought you guys are a fully funded organization. I was like, how? Like the things you guys do on Twitter, not most of us can actually do that. And I was like, this is it, light bulb. This needs to be a structured organization. So I started putting things together slowly by slowly. And then this was also a changing moment for my parents because this was the first time they saw their daughter on TV. And when you're on TV, you're your parents' favorite. They are being called by everyone. They saw you on TV. You're the celeb of that house. Nobody can say anything. And my dad started gaining trust. So my dad would even say, oh, I know you're going somewhere. Do you have transport? He never asked that for the longest time. So I was like, okay, I'm getting it back. When I was 23, I did a full page newspaper feature. And my dad was called by his partners and people and he's like, bingo, this is it. So I'm now finally going back to be my dad's pride. I'm here now. So this started changing because, and I think there's one thing when, especially when you're a young girl and you give birth early and you have an opportunity to actually redeem yourself because our society sort of condemns you. So being able to just like rise up and redeem yourself was one of the brightest things that could have ever happened in my life. So being here now, people are seeing you like, oh, she can actually guide you. A few years ago, I was that she will mislead you. Don't walk with her, you know. And then now all of a sudden, these parents are like, you need to be like her. She's doing, you know. People are not knowing I don't even have money. These are just, you know, the way you're mentioned on blogs, you mentioned when everybody thinks you have a lot of money and you have nothing. So it was like a whole thing. And then I realized my heart belongs here. I want to really serve in this manner. I never knew I was an activist until I started speaking out. Mm. I never knew I could actually do some things until I started doing. So I tell people I went to the street university and came out as this person who is doing consultancies and doing all these things like they went to Harvard University. But... But it was a journey worth it, I would say, and it's been a journey worth it to date. And I don't think I would trade what I'm doing for anything else. And the way people keep asking, what would you tell your 19-year-old self? Go get pregnant again and get brains in order. Because this changed my mentality, even with my parents. We see pregnancy as some form of respectively a disability. People think that you're not able to move. People think that you're cursed. It's done for you. This is it. But I don't get why the same people when you're 30 are like, hey, your biological clock is ticking, you need to give birth. I don't know what changes in between. But for me, this changed even the way I was thinking. Because before then, I was thinking of how I want to go to the university, just become this person doing PR, probably get a job in an organization. And, you know, I was not thinking beyond that. I was not thinking that, you know, you could actually employ a few people with you. You could actually work with creatives and make things happen. And luckily, I met a group of people everywhere I went, and everything they were doing, I was like, we can actually fuse this and this and make it this. And they became a community. So we've been doing things for now 5-6 years together. And I'm like, we started without pay. And now we're at a point where we can actually say, this is my price tag. And I don't care what you think about it, but I've worked for this. I've built this. So I think So Tribeless Youth is an organization working with creatives and young people to just bring satire to the injustices and abnormalities that happen in our political world. Why we do this is because we believe we are able to educate through this. We are able to trigger conversations because for me, any form of art speaks to the heart. Mm. We can have forums, have all these lectures and everything, but one goes through here and leaves from the other ear. But when we are able to actually have something that people relate to, then this starts sparking conversations. Through Tribeless Youth, and this I think is one of my biggest and proud moments, is 50 years of this country existing, 50 years of the political injustices, 50 years of neocolonialism. We finally started having a conversation about our tribes and what they mean to us when they come to elections. For me, that was like, you know, if a 23-year-old can make you people have this conversation, then we have the power to change this whole political nonsense that we have. So for me, I think that is the greatest thing. Though we are not yet there, we are still working towards, because I think for us, our bigger goal is to have a creative space where creatives can have their exchange programs, where creatives can learn how to turn their art into business, mm-hmm. where creatives can also come and exchange notes and have the exhibitions and everything, and be able to use the power of digital media to now expand their scope of work. I believe we are marching towards that direction. And I still think I'm still young, so we're still moving, yeah. My dad and my son are like brothers. They call each other brother. Like, it's a weird relationship. But I think it also came at the right time where it built a certain bridge. Because if I take my son for 2 days from my dad, it's like he'll call every day. I even tell him, like, dude, this is not a doctor's prescription. He'll call me at 8 in the morning. Has he taken tea? At 12 noon, mumekula nini? And Johnny at 6, umeanza kupika. And I'm like, he's mine. He won't die in my hands. But he saw my dad sort of also collect himself back, because he also happened at the time where my dad lost his mom. So when my dad lost his mom, he was not talking to so many people. But this kid was able to make him laugh and come out and talk and, you know, and do these things. So we sort of feel like this was that thing that was meant to happen, to just bring a certain feeling in the house. And of course, we are from the African culture where I have never understood what is the difference between a girl and a boy, but there's this whole narrative about it. And one thing I never said is that my son took 2 years, 2.5 years before he got full names. So he like operated on one name for the longest time until people are able to figure it out. Am I against people working things out with their baby daddies? No. But I'm also pro women understanding their value, and that we don't necessarily need to keep fighting over someone raising your kid for you to feel. A kid takes two people, but also it takes more than a sperm donor to be a father. And when I see that, people say I'm talking nonsense, but there's a huge difference. If I wanted a sperm donor, I can walk to a sperm bank and get a baby. If I wanted a father, I needed to know better that I needed a man who's cultured and who understands the responsibility that comes with it. So we have so many people who wear their pants but are basically just sperm donors. It is okay to realize that not every person who is able to make you pregnant can be a father. And so it is with women also. Not every person who is able to carry a baby can be a mother.
100 African Stories, the Legally Clueless 2021 tour, powered by African No Filter. We're traveling through Kisumu, Nakuru, Mombasa, and Nairobi, bringing you real, raw, and inspiring African stories.
That was a very interesting story by Chico. It's just, you know what was very interesting about it for me, and I get that with quite a few other stories, is just the very easy, nonchalant way she will share about overcoming something so heavy, you know, and she'll just drop it like, oh yeah, it's just another thing. And I'm like, my goodness, how did you hack that? How can you have just given birth and you're getting calls from other women? You know, you just become a mother, you have a newborn, you're still in hospital, and those are the calls you're getting. It's madness. But we recorded Chico's story during our stop in Nakuru while we were on tour as Legally Clueless. So I think you should definitely check out the Legally Clueless Tour Nakuru episode. It's on our YouTube channel, and there is a link to our YouTube in the show notes. Speaking of which, if you want to share your story on this podcast, all you have to do is fill out a specific form. A link to it is in the show notes, and you can fill out the form, and in a bit I'll get back to you and we'll figure out how to record your story. We do it virtually, so wherever you are on the continent, off of the continent, your story is valid and we can definitely record you. Oh, the last thing that I want to say, okay, maybe not the last thing, but second last thing that I want to say is our hotline. I haven't been sharing it. Apologies, I do not know why. So if you listen to something on this podcast and you connect with it, or you have experienced something similar, or you just want to share something about something you've heard on any of the episodes, you can record an audio note and send it to the hotline via WhatsApp. Now, the hotline number, I have not memorized it yet. It's saved on my phone, so I'm actually trying to say. There we go. It's +254 768 628 790. But you can also find it in our show notes.
Hi, Adele. My name is Wanjiru. I recently discovered your podcast and I am so happy because I'm one of those people who like coming to the party late. That way there's like a bunch of episodes for me to enjoy. I was even home this past weekend and I was doing a load of laundry and my mom passes by and she's like, oh, that podcast is your Kameme. Basically, she's like, that's your radio. I'm like, yeah. A lot of inspiring stories, even the ones you cannot relate to. There's a lot of empathy you feel and you feel a lot of connectedness to the person. So in your words, oh my word, please keep up.
That is such a kind message and I appreciate you including this podcast in your routines, like doing your washing. That's a very intimate moment. I mean that. I'm not joking. So I appreciate stumbling on your voice notes because, yeah, it just feels good that I'm not building a space that only I feel comfortable in, that you hear things that you empathize with or relate with is very, very powerful for me. And it's kind of like where I'll go to refuel on the days that I'm doubting this podcasting thing, you know? So yeah, thanks for sharing. Lastly, do remember that you can, yes, of course, stream this podcast on your favorite streaming platforms, but if you're in Kenya, you can catch Legally Clueless on Trace Radio. All you have to do is go to traceradio.co.ke and there'll be a list of frequencies. So wherever you are in Kenya, you can tune in every Monday and Wednesday at 12 noon and 11 p.m. and every Friday at 12 noon, and you'll catch the podcast over there. So I need to wrap up. The reason I'm not talking too much is because if I do, remember the previous episodes I was telling you that there's something I'm doing that I'm not meant to share just yet? Yeah, if I keep talking, I might just let something slip because I'm not too good with secrets. So I'm going to end this podcast, or rather this episode right here, and just say thank you so much for listening to the very, very end.
That's it for this episode of Legally Clueless. You can share this podcast with your friends. You can keep it for yourself. I'm not judging. Just make sure you're here next week for the next episode.